This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good Friday to you. Thanks for joining us at this Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Yeah, we got a weekend where there is no football from the NFL side. But as we told you yesterday, the XFL is kicking off. So if that is your thing, you could be interested in that. But we also got the NBA All-Star Game coming up and the Daytona 500. We will preview the Daytona 500 coming up this hour. Jeff Hammond on Fox Sports will join us to talk about the Great American Race. They had their dual races last night. They're races to determine the rest of the running order for the Daytona. It's the best way to put it. So they have a pole qualifying on Wednesday, and they have two cars that are going to start on the front row. And then how is it going to be behind them? Well, they have races to determine that. And so last night they had two 60-lap, 150-mile races to determine the rest of the running order. And then, of course, we've got Sunday's race, the 65th Daytona 500. Jeff Hammond, always a good guest, always love having him on. So he'll preview one of the biggest events on the calendar is the Daytona 500, and we'll talk to him about that. But we've also got NFL news to get to, because now is the time where teams are starting to figure out how their offseason is going to look. We can watch Aaron Rodgers in the darkness and wait for him to emerge. Derek Carr is available right now. If you want to start talking to him, start putting a plan in place to eventually sign Derek Carr. But Lamar Jackson is an interesting situation that's going on in Baltimore. We watched this play out during the regular season where he missed the last five games and didn't play in the playoff game, had that PCL injury. And, you know, people had their own sort of opinions about that, whether or not he should have been available for the Ravens, whether he should have played for Baltimore going into those final weeks when it was going back and forth into playoff positioning and whatnot, and including the playoff game. Should he have played in the playoff game? And everybody's a doctor. Everybody's got an opinion, a medical opinion. But in the end, he didn't. And it's easy to sort of be skeptical because he was looking for a large contract. He was looking for a guaranteed contract, much on the same level as Deshaun Watson. And he was in a position where he didn't want to risk further injury, even if it meant helping his team, even if that wasn't his mindset, even if he was like, look, I'm legitimately hurt, I really can't play. It didn't stop the pundits from coming out and at least expressing an opinion that maybe he could have played and he didn't want to play. Because to be honest with you, we've been blindsided by athletes doing that before. But the Ravens are in a situation here where John Harbaugh is saying that he's 200% sure that he's 200% is a lot of percent. He's 200% sure that he will be on the roster for the 2023 season. But there is speculation that the Ravens could possibly trade Lamar Jackson. Now, let's not mince words here. When Lamar Jackson is on the field, the Ravens win football games. That's basically how it works. When he's not, they don't. But when he's on the field, he wins. He's a former MVP. But he's been hurt. And hurt a lot. And that can sway you as a general manager. How much guaranteed money, money that's not yours, are you going to give to a quarterback that may not produce on the level that you want him to produce because he's prone to injury? But the one other factor that's hitting the Ravens right now is this. We know that the entire offense for the Baltimore Ravens revolves around Lamar Jackson. And in that way, you have to shuffle out your offense if you're going to go in another direction. So if you put the franchise tag on him without getting him a long-term deal, he gets bitter. If you give him the long-term deal, you're now committing to him. Again, a former MVP, one of the best quarterbacks that's playing in the game right now, but prone to injury. And what level do you want to set for a player like that when everybody is looking at what the Cleveland Browns did with Deshaun Watson and saying, "How are you insane? You've just set the bar to an incredibly ridiculous level with that much money guaranteed." And Lamar Jackson has every right to say to the Ravens, "They did it for that guy. You can do it for me." He has every right to say that. So the Ravens did something just a few days ago that's very critical to this process. After firing Greg Roman, they hired Tom Monken. And Monken, who was an offensive coordinator with Cleveland and Tampa Bay, has spent the last 3 years at the University of Georgia, where he was the quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator. So Monken is coming back to the National Football League. Now, what happens when you get a new OC? You don't hire offensive coordinators to do the status quo. They all come in with their own ideas of how their offense is going to work. They convince you that they are good for your team, and you hire them. You know, you don't, again, you're not hiring guys with offensive minds to do what somebody else implemented. So Monken is going to be in charge of instilling a new offense to maybe get Lamar Jackson to throw the ball more and throw the ball better. After all, he was a quarterback's coach at Georgia, helping Stetson Bennett become a megastar. And he was also in the NFL for a number of years, so he's got NFL experience. But that's going to be his job. Implement a new offense that maybe we can get a better passing game out of Lamar Jackson without sacrificing the things that Lamar Jackson does. Here's the problem. If the Ravens do not get a long-term deal with Lamar Jackson that's satisfactory to him and the team, and they put the franchise tag on him at the appropriate time on the calendar when you can do that, Jackson is going to do, likely going to do, what a lot of people do who are waiting around for that long-term deal. He might hold out. He might not report to the facility. He may not be able to talk to Todd Monken about the direction of the offense. And Monken is going to be sort of handcuffed because he's not going to be able to talk to his quarterback about how they want the offense to work. So all of that preliminary putting together the offensive strategy in camps and whatnot and meetings and all of the times that players are available to kind of get ready for the upcoming season, Lamar Jackson may be out of all of that if they don't get a long-term deal in place. And it's interesting because if you're Todd Monken and you took the job, you knew this already. You knew that the situation between team and quarterback is kind of on thin ice. Now, it's possible that behind the scenes, they are currently working on the long-term deal. But there has been so much speculation as to where the Ravens are going with this quarterback. Will they sign him to a long-term deal? That would be ideal for everybody, right? Again, a former MVP that shows he can win games when he plays for you. He puts you in the postseason when he plays for you. Do you franchise tag him? Because you're not going to set another bar for a quarterback that gets as injured as he does, and you're not going to set another bar. Like, it would not be surprising if all the owners said, whatever they did to Deshaun Watson, let's not move past that. That's insane. 230 plus, all guaranteed. No. So the Ravens could work out a long-term deal, or they could franchise tag him in a sense of, we're going to work out something that's better for our team and not something that is outlandish given what the Cleveland Browns did with Deshaun Watson. But the third thing that's gaining momentum and gaining steam is that, and this has been reported by insiders who say they've got inside information, and who knows if those are true, that they'd be willing to trade Lamar Jackson if they got a sort of a boatload of picks coming at them the other way. So that's the scenario. Those are the three scenarios. And it's a standard, what do you do when the quarterback is up for his contract? Now, a lot of teams avoid this, right? Like the Kansas City Chiefs avoided this with Patrick Mahomes. They didn't have to worry about this. They just went right to the, hey, we're going to give you $500 million in some way, shape, or form. But the thing I have to say that was eye-opening to me, and a lot of it is because of our relationship on the show, is that Emory Hunt, who comes on the show, Pro Football Focus, I believe is his website.
It's not Pro Football Focus.
No, Pro Football Focus is another website.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh God.
Emory Hunt.
I'll come up with it.
Football Outsiders. He put out a tweet that said, "Just a reminder, Lamar Jackson played in a pro style offense while he was at Louisville in college." And Lamar Jackson retweeted that with the words, "Thank you." Because, again, with Todd Monken being hired, Monken could go in a number of different directions on how that offense is going to look. And a lot of people are saying that maybe Monken was brought in with the idea that the Ravens want to trade Lamar Jackson to go in another direction offensively. Remember, they're not a very good passing team when Lamar Jackson's on the field. That's not his threat. But that is a way to get sort of remind people that, wait, just because Monken might want to instill another style of offense that's not 100% around Lamar Jackson, it doesn't mean Lamar Jackson can't play within that offense. Very fascinating. We can all talk about Derek Carr now that he's a free agent, talk about Aaron Rodgers, about what is he going to do, stay in Green Bay, play for the Jets or whatever. Pay attention to Baltimore. This is an MVP quarterback. This is a guy that, again, wins football games, finds ways to win football games. One of the most threatening quarterbacks that you can have on the field with his legs. There's a situation in Baltimore that's brewing. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Member Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call. SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. I saw that Tim McCarver passed away last night.
Yeah.
At the age of 81. That makes me sad.
That was harsh.
I really liked Tim McCarver. I read his book. If you haven't ever read it, it's really good, Baseball for Brain Surgeons. No matter how much you think you know baseball, you read that book and you go, man, I don't really know a lot about baseball. It's a really, really in-depth, strategic look at baseball. It's one of those, everything is here. Like, every little nuance of the game. Why does somebody bat fifth? Why does somebody bat seventh? What kind of player do you want in left field and why that's different than a guy you play in right field? Like, it's that kind of book. Every little detail. I love the title of the book. Somebody must have said to him, Tim, this book is so intense. This is not baseball for dummies. This is baseball for brain surgeons. And they went, that's a great title. We should do that on the on the heel of the dummies books. We should make it sound. And I thought it would spawn a whole like slew of people, like a whole industry, kind of like the dummies books, right?
Yeah.
Where instead of the dummies books, you get, well, I know how to play chess. I don't need a dummies book on chess. What I need is a brain surgeon book on chess and a whole series of that. Because it was like I would read it and go, it was one of those books where it was so intense. You're like, oh, my God, I totally didn't know that. I didn't know that you could, like, if a shortstop moves three steps to the right, it could affect this way. And it's really good. And again, it goes back to something I repeat over and over again. If you really, really, really love something, I may not love it as much as you, but I can respect you loving that as much as you do. And Tim McCarver loved baseball. He loved baseball. And listen, he had a great mind for the sport, and he had to deliver it in those broadcasts in a way that the casual fan could understand it. And yet his brain was filled with so much knowledge, and he had to filter all of that to make it so that it was digestible to the average baseball fan that maybe just tuning into a baseball game because it's the playoffs and whatnot. And he did 24 World Series games for three networks. And obviously the most famous was an 18-year run that he had with Joe Buck on Fox Sports. But he was an all-star baseball player. He was an all-star catcher. He caught for Bob Gibson. He told a lot of stories. He had a good, long Major League Baseball career. Spent 60 years in the game as a player and broadcaster. And when you're into something for 60 years, you know, you become synonymous with it. And I was kind of sad. I was kind of sad that he had passed away. I didn't know what he was doing after the Fox, sort of the mini breakup of them when they started, when they moved, like he sort of retired and went into, I don't know what he did. I don't know if he was doing local stuff with different, with another team. I lost track of him and I feel bad because I really liked Tim McCarver. I thought him and Buck were a really good baseball pairing. And I used to kind of make, not really make fun, but I, years and years ago, I used to kind of tease him in a way because Fox had this thing where they sort of dumbed down baseball. They were using like cartoon graphics. I want to say this was like 2004, 2005. They were kind of using like cartoon graphics to describe baseball. And Tim McCarver had to do these like almost like Schoolhouse Rock things where he wasn't singing, but he was basically following along these cartoons on explaining baseball strategy to people, like the basics of baseball strategy, like what's a hit and run, right? Like you're Joe from Iowa and you're like, I don't really care about baseball. They're like, what's a hit and run? And Tim McCarver would have like these, this little segment where he would describe what that is. You're like, oh, okay. So the runner runs and then he hits. Okay. I get it. And I always thought that was a little hard for Tim McCarver to take because he's probably wanting to tell you a lot more about these things, real deep about these things. But instead, he had to deal with just the basics. It's like, yeah, a strike is a strike when it goes into the strike zone. Ugh, must have drove him crazy. Just wants to explain the nuances of pitches and what's the strategy with certain counts and what the catcher and the pitcher are talking about through the signals and what signals work. And he probably wanted to dive into all of that, but they just dumbed it down for him. Then they sort of let it go a bit, and then he became a little bit more free to describe baseball. But I was kind of sad. I didn't know Raquel Welch passed away on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
We always get these in threes, don't we?
Yeah, no kidding, right?
So I don't know who's next, or like, did we already have one?
I was looking in the New York Post today. I was reading a couple of things in the Post, and there was a side article, and the side article said, "Shocking pictures of Raquel Welch in her final days," and I was like, "Final days? What are you talking about?" And I clicked on it, and I went, "She died on Wednesday." What am I in a, am I living in a cave? Why wasn't that major news? She was one of the biggest sex symbols in American entertainment ever. Why in the world did, why didn't I know that? Why did I have to read a sports story in the New York Post and find out Raquel Welch died on a side story?
Because you took that day off.
Is that what he did?
I don't know.
Mentally? Did you know when she died?
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you? Okay.
Man, like it was like Tuesday night or Wednesday that?
You know what my problem is? I'm playing too many video games. And video games don't get interrupted for news. I got to stop. I got to stop playing these games.
But it's
driving
hard.
Me nuts.
It's hard, man. You can't walk away. No, you haven't defeated level 3 yet, right?
No. Let me tell you something. I'm going to make an honest admission on this radio show. I used to make fun, not really make fun, but used to roll my eyes at guys that would play video games. And that's the only thing they wanted to do. Right? You'd have these girls going, "I can't even get my man to do." Then I got a few games under my belt, and I kid you not, it's the only thing I wanted to. I'm not kidding. My wife will come up to me, "You want to go to dinner?" Sure.
Sure.
And then she goes, "You want to stay and play?" I'll go to dinner. It's seriously, it's like that. One time I was playing a game, and I looked at the time, it was 11:15. And I went, "I've done this for 3 hours?" I lost all track of time. all track of time. It's addicting, man. I can't, I got to break away from it. So now I feel bad when I used to kind of get on to my kids. I'm like, stop, just turn that thing off and let's go. We've got to do this. You just get involved in these. Like, I loved the Atari 2600 when I was a kid, but I don't think I played it for 3 hours straight. I think eventually I was like, all right, Space Invaders is fun and Donkey Kong is neat and this terrible version of Pac-Man is okay. But eventually I got to do something else. No, man, I'm getting wrapped up in this. So that is probably why I missed Raquel Welch passing away on Wednesday. But I definitely saw the news about Tim McCarver passing away last night. Do you like Tim McCarver?
I did.
As a baseball guy?
I did, yeah. Yeah. I thought he was always really good, a good analyst.
Remember when
analyst of the game.
Remember when Deion Sanders dumped water on him while he was doing a stand-up in the Atlanta Braves dugout?
I know. I wonder if anyone's going to ask Deion about that now.
Yeah. Does anyone? Yeah. When Deion, now that Deion is at Colorado telling his team they're not wearing slides and they're going to sit in the front of the class and they're going to be opening doors for people and they're going to say yes, sir, yes, ma'am to everybody within that within that institution, regardless of what they are. Like, he's instilling discipline into his team. I wonder if anybody was going to go, coach, man, remember when you were about our age?
Yeah.
When you dumped a bucket of water on a broadcaster, mic'd up on a TV stand just before he was on the air? Remember when you did that because you didn't like what he said? Yeah, because he's probably telling his athletes, now that he's older and wiser, don't let criticism get to you. Don't give it the time of day. Don't respond on social media to people criticizing you. Let it go. Right. Don't respond back. It gets you into trouble. We're going to be up here. Let them be down here. And then Tim McCarver criticizes Deion Sanders back in the 90s for playing football and baseball while his team was in the World Series. And Deion Sanders decided, I took that personally, and dumped a bucket of water on top of Tim McCarver while he was on TV. Oh my God!
Kind of off on the similar subject though. I was watching, every once in a while, social media, highlights, old highlights will come up because of who you're following.
Right.
And I can't remember which game it was. I think it was the Cubs game, Cubs World Series game. And Joe Buck was on the call, obviously,
right,
for the World Series. And it just hit me. It was like, God, I'm going to miss that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Much as we all complain about Joe Buck, you all are going to miss him now.
I'm telling you, man, Joe Davis does a good job, but he doesn't have that Buck kind of level, right? You're right. You're 100% correct. All right, coming up, how did Tiger do at the Genesis Invitation? I'll tell you.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Jeff Hammond is going to join us from Fox Sports coming up at 45 past the hour. Daytona 500. Do you remember that kid in Malcolm in the Middle, Frankie Muniz? Is that how you pronounce his last name?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he's a race car driver now.
Oh, okay, and, that's what you do, right? I mean, you're a successful child actor, and you go,
you got some money in the
racing
bank.
Thing.
You got your little board. You don't want to do Hollywood anymore. You just go, what can I do?
Yeah. I do remember when he was like 16, 17, he did do the Long Beach Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
he got hooked from that.
I guess he was always interested in this. So he's driving in the ARCA series, and they're one of the Speed Week series that's racing. It's a bunch of cars. There's a lot of races that are going on. Anyway, he had the fastest time at practice yesterday in the ARCA series. Good for him. Malcolm. What else did he do? Do you know anything else besides Malcolm?
He did a lot of movies.
Okay. I don't know much about his acting career other than
no, that's all I remember. He did movies.
Yeah. He's like 37 years old now.
Is he really?
So, yeah. Must be nice to be like I think that
first of all, he was a child actor who didn't fall into the child actor pitfalls that so many do.
Exactly. Like the parents steal all the money and you're suing your dad
for
$60 million.
Or, he hasn't been strung out on drugs for years upon years. And
exactly.
Lost everything. No, he just decided parlay all the riches he got from Hollywood into a racing career.
And then said, listen, I want to learn how to do this and I got money and time. I think I can learn and you know, get taught, go to these racing academies.
I want to be the best.
And I want to do it. And you know what? Let's be honest. If you're an actor like him and you make a lot of money, and even if you get a little bit of a late start, there's really no reason you can't do it. You may not be a world champion. You may not get to the highest level, but if you have money and time and you're just spending all of your resources getting the best people to help you, and you can be a pretty successful race car driver on a level of like, hey, I can do some stuff. Again, I may not be a NASCAR Cup champion, or I may not be an Indy 500 winner, but I can do these series and I can tour and I can have a career at this. So he's got a career at this. So Frankie Muniz was the fastest car in practice yesterday. So Jeff Hammond is going to join us to talk Daytona 500. A cool event. It's one of the weird sporting events that we have in this country where it's the Super Bowl of their sport and it's the beginning of the season.
Fantastic.
It's not at the end. The most important race on the calendar for this sport is at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, let's just get it out of the way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly. It's like having the Masters in January, like the PGA Tour opening up at Augusta. It's like, whoa, slow down. Wait a minute. We haven't even gotten to the swing of things yet. And I used to think that it took a driver. It used to be that it was a hard race to win because you really had to navigate a number of different things with the Daytona 500. You had to keep your car clean, meaning no bumps or anything. Days of Thunder sort of ruined the myth. You cannot bang your car all over the place and have the aerodynamics to win the Daytona 500. That's not happening. So you have to keep your car clean. You have to avoid the big one, right, which is the big crash. You have to get some help in drafting. And so you have a lot of things that have to work out. And that's why it took Dale Earnhardt a long time before he finally won the Daytona 500. But recently, there's been some drivers that have won the Daytona 500 where you never hear from them again. Like, they just sort of disappear and they go, oh, look at that. He won the Daytona 500. And they may not be a champion and they might not win again that season. Because, again, you find yourself up front. Next thing you know, you're like, hey, look at this. The big one took out half the field, or they took out 10 cars or whatever it may be. So it can be circumstantial how you can win this race, but it is still a really, really big deal. It's still a really big race. It's one of the crown jewels of the calendar. And we love having Jeff Hammond on because he loves the sport. So we'll have him on in a couple of minutes. Travis Kelce is going to be on Saturday Night Live. Did you see that news? That's going to be fun, I think. Do we think Travis Kelce will be good at this? Seems to be very,
I don't know,
open and fun and
yeah,
wild.
There's a chance it could be good.
Right.
You know, but there's also a chance that it could flame up horribly.
So, imagine the writers going, so, Travis, we've got a skit where you're not an NFL tight end. Instead, you sell snow cones to kids at a park, but you're all intense like you're a football player. And he goes, what? You disrespecting me? You telling me I couldn't be a tight end? I couldn't be an NFL player? Is that what this kid is saying? No. It's just funny. You're a big guy and you've got this, this personality, and you're selling snow cones to children. And you're just so intense, and the kids are scared. Well, that's disrespect. No one's giving me any respect. I don't want that. I want funny, self-deprecating humor. Watch Peyton Manning on Saturday Night Live. Do that, and you'll be good. You'll be good to go.
Maybe do another version of United Way, and it's where, blocking drills. I don't know.
I mean, remember, Travis Kelce was in a reality show about girls dating him, Catching Kelce.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Remember that?
Yes.
So he's got some entertainment chops.
Does Jason come on?
Yeah. Does Jason make a cameo? Does his mom make a cameo?
I don't know.
The mom's going to make a cameo, right?
She's got to. They got to do a skit on that. What everyone wanted was for her to do the coin toss. They should do a skit on that.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, just them tossing a coin, heads or tails, over a bunch of different things. The choices get more ridiculous as it goes on.
Would it be funny if she was on the show and they set it up as the pregame and they were interviewing and she talked how awesome Jason was, and she couldn't remember the name of her other son.
Yeah.
That would be funny.
Because they disrespect him.
There's no respect
for the Chiefs.
Where she's like, well, I'm just really proud of Jason. He's done such a great job, and he's had such a great career. Let's talk about your other son. He's good. He's good, too. He's here at the Super Bowl. How would you pronounce my son's name? He's got a weird first name. Travis? No. Oh, yeah, Travis. Yeah, Travis. That's right. Travis. That could be funny. In the right hands, in a good Saturday Night Live writer, that could be funny. I don't know. But I'll tell you this. The Peyton Manning, the United Way spot came out of left field. I had no idea he was capable. Remember at the time, I had no idea Peyton Manning was capable of that kind of comedy. That was early in his career. That's not now. And when Peyton Manning's on every commercial I see, and he's just yuck, 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 the comedic stylings of one Peyton Manning. That was relatively early in his career. That one was so good that it made me go, my perception of Peyton Manning is entirely different than what I thought. I thought he was a serious, straight up, boring football player. Nope. Funny. Hilarious. Eli Manning, the same thing. I didn't know Eli Manning had some comedic chops. He's funny. He wasn't as good on Saturday Night Live as his brother.
No,
but nobody's as good.
But since being retired, and I don't know, maybe it's hanging out a little bit more. He's come around.
Yeah, he's come around.
He's gotten better.
He's a lot more loose, yeah. Athletes on Saturday Night Live is hit and miss. Nancy Kerrigan was atrocious when she was on there. She was atrocious. But Charles Barkley's done the show before. A couple of others. The athletes have done it. Derek Jeter did it once. Tom Brady did it once. It's a lot of work, though. You got to really commit to that. It's a whole week of skits and writings and preparation and rehearsals and whatnot. So good luck, Travis Kelce. Tiger Woods at the Genesis Invitational shot a 2-under par 69 at Riviera Country Club.
Not too shabby.
Five shots back of the leaders, Keith Mitchell and Max Homa. But no, look, he didn't go out and shoot an 80, right? First competitive round of 2023 tournament he's hosting. But he went out and birdied the final three holes to get to 2-under par. So good for Tiger. Remember, we talked about this early this week. He said in his press conference, do you think you can win? Yes. He goes in to compete. He goes in trying to win tournaments. He's not a ceremonial player. He is not just waving to the crowd and just enjoying playing professional golf. He goes into these tournaments trying to win. You may not think he can win, but he's not in the tournament if he doesn't think he could win, and he's always thinking of winning. That's the difference. And you know what I noticed with watching Full Swing, is there are guys who will go through the motions. There are guys that will just go, whatever, I'm just out here making a living, hitting some golf balls. I don't have it this week, but I'll just get around. Enjoy the perks of being at the whatever, wherever. Tiger Woods is like, no, when I go, I am preparing to win. I'm analyzing the course. I'm analyzing the strategy. So Tiger Woods had a good round on Thursday. A little suspended. They'll be wrapping it up today, but he got in with a 2-under par 69 at Riviera. Of course, a tournament he has never won in his career. But the Daytona 500 will be on Sunday. Dual races were Thursday night. Qualifying was Wednesday. What does the Daytona 500 preview look like? Jeff Hammond from Fox Sports will join us next. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, looking for a career path with flexibility and great pay and benefits? Go to progressive.com/careers. And for drivers who switch and save with Progressive, save nearly $700 on average. Call or click today. Find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Jeff Hammond joins us, Fox Sports, Daytona 500, the Great American Race coming up this weekend. Always good to have Jeff on to talk some NASCAR as the season gets underway. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing wonderful, my man. I've been down here in Daytona enjoying working on my suntan, and getting wound up for the upcoming 2023 season.
You got it. All right, let's. I want to ask you about last night's dual races. I've always found this fascinating that traditionally you go to a race and there's just normal qualifying and they kind of list how everybody did and that's how the starting grid goes. And Daytona traditionally says, no, we do that, but we just get the first two places and then we run these really exciting races on Thursday. In your experience, how do drivers do that, go through a dual race? They're race car drivers. They want to be aggressive. They want to race. But you could affect your starting position based on certain gaps that you don't take, certain gaps you do take. How cautious are drivers during the dual races, knowing that it affects where they start Sunday?
It's not so much the starting place on Sunday that you're worried about. You're worried about your finishing place on Sunday, because – if you get out here in a qualifying race, and this is supposedly your best car, I mean, the guy, engineers, your body people, everybody has worked on it to make it the best of what you can build out of your particular shop and with the guidance of your manufacturers. So when you put that much effort into one car, if you go down here and you tear it up, you don't have another one exactly like it.
Yeah.
You know, these cars are very, very similar. And anything that you race at Daytona, you know, you could theoretically have it turned around, everything like that, and run it, you know, in Atlanta here in a few weeks. But your number one piece, I mean, it's got every little bit of, I mean, it's finite. Everything is finite. And when you tear that up, that's the thing you got to worry about more than anything else. You've got to realize that you don't have something that's going to give you an advantage in the truck. You know, so that's where the problem really begins, is you got to get these guys to understand, just like what happened last night.
Yeah.
The comment that came out of Kyle Busch's mouth to his crew, well, we just destroyed a car, we could have gone to victory lane with. And that's the mentality every one of those drivers have down here. And you have to stay in their head and tell them, look, risk versus reward, risk versus reward. Now, you have some drivers that, you know, needed a risk a little bit because they won in the race. But if you've got a guaranteed starting spot, you can start dead last in this race and win it.
That's a key, too, is that this race is unlike other places. I mean, super speedways tend to do this where circumstances, whether it's the big one or catching the draft or when you pit, could really turn you from starting in the 30s to winning this race.
Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't take but one round of pit stops. It doesn't take but one hitting a scenario where somebody tries to go three wide and for whatever reason the middle's working and the outside and the inside are kind of stalled out and the middle starts going and you can start 40 at the worst and you can find yourself all of a sudden running in the top 10.
Yep.
You know, the seas will part from time to time if you're really good at anticipating. And one element that helps the driver to anticipate is his spotter. He's the eyes on what's out in front. He's the eyes that are seeing what's going on behind. You know, driver's got to be focused, you know, really what's all around him close by. He can't see 5, 6, 10 rows ahead of him. He can't see 3, 4, 5, 6 rows behind him effectively. But if he can see momentum coming and the right person is bringing it, you can let him know, hey, here comes Kevin Harvick. He's got a run on, you know, up the middle, jump in front of him, you know, or, hey, he's coming. He's got five guys with him, fall in behind him. So this communication deal this weekend, especially in the practice today, you're going to be seeing some of this. And more importantly, you'll see it on Sunday. The communication between the spotter and the driver has got to be at its best on the first race of the season.
This event has a Hall of Fame list of past champions, but Austin Cindric was a rookie. He won. Michael McDowell won. Taylor Bayne won. But if you were to handicap the number one reason you'll win the Daytona 500, out of all the things that we mentioned, what's the most important factor on how drivers can win this race?
Anticipation. You've got to anticipate when there's trouble and try your best to avoid it. And there's an art to that. I like what Denny Hamlin, who's won this race three times, and he tells everybody, look, you can luck into winning a Daytona 500. I mean, the seas could part. You know, there's a wreck in front of you on the final lap, and you get through and nobody else does. So you win the race. But when you come back and you win it a second time, and especially a three-time winner, or you go and look at the history books and you got, you know, Richard Petty, seven-time, Cale Yarborough, four-time. These drivers, they all of them that have got multiple wins, they have the ability to realize, this is really getting edgy, and it's the wrong time of the day to be up here and edgy. And so you bail out, or you see something happening and you make the right decision during the course of the race to avoid it. I mean, it's you've got to have a feel and to be a good, you know, super speedway racer.
Kyle Busch is
prove it out, you know.
You mentioned Kyle Busch. He is now he's switched teams now with Richard Childress. How does when drivers change teams, what's the thing you need to watch out for? How is it relationships with the new team? Is it the car? We see it in other sports, and we always wonder how Tom Brady will fit with the Buccaneers. Is there some similar way to describe it when a driver, a major driver, changes teams?
Yes. I mean, when Tom Brady came from the Patriots down to the Buccaneers, you know, they start trying to build a coaching staff and a team around him. Well, we do the same thing in racing. You know, we start looking for, you know, pieces of the puzzle to make the puzzle come together faster. You know, you put him with a good crew chief. You put him with a good spotter. You put him with, you know, a group of engineers that can talk and listen to what he has to say. Because the one thing that a veteran winning driver or quarterback, any kind of player, when they come to another team, you want to learn and try to have them educate you, because there may be something within his playbook that y'all haven't discovered in your playbook. So it's an opportunity to strengthen the whole organization, and most notably the team you're working for immediately. And if you can absorb that energy, if you can listen to what he had learned through his years of experience being within the sport and the business of NASCAR, all of these things make you stronger. I mean, Richard Childress has been around a long time, but if every year that goes by, if you don't learn something new before you know it, you will not be around. You'll not be competitive. And I think bringing in Kyle Busch has given him a treasure trove of information that comes directly from one of the, you know, his fierce competitors, you know, Toyota and Joe Gibbs Racing. So, you know, I really expect great things, and I think last night was a great indicator that they are definitely on track. I'm not going to say they're ahead. I'm not going to say they're behind. But they're definitely, I think, you know, showing that they've got good communication already, and Kyle is taking advantage of what they're able to build for him.
I got a minute, but I wanted to ask you something. We did a Throwback Thursday segment, and we kind of go back in history. We pick a historical event, talk about it. And yesterday was Jeff Gordon winning the Daytona 500 at 25. And now that he's gone into being a businessman, former broadcaster, can you just give us an indication of his level of importance on the history of this sport and who Jeff Gordon and how much he matters to NASCAR?
Well, Jeff brought in, you know, a totally different, you know, he was kind of like a more modern-day Tim Richmond to a certain degree. Tim had a little bit of edge to him. Jeff came in with an innocence, but at the same time, a level of talent that we didn't expect to see from somebody from where he developed his talent, you know, as far as the little mini sprints and the types of stuff that he raced all through the Midwest, around Indianapolis. But from coming from California, we have not seen somebody with that kind of talent and who could race against the likes of Earnhardt and Waltrip at that period. And I think that the level of respect that Jeff gained is a great outline for any driver. If you want to know how to do it, this is how you do it. And I think that he redefined and, like I say, brought a freshness and a realization that it doesn't matter where you're born. It just matters how much and how bad you want it.
Jeff Hammond, great stuff. Always love talking to you, my friend. The Great American Race, the Super Bowl of NASCAR coming up on Sunday. Always good talking to you, my friend. Enjoy the broadcast. Enjoy the race.
All right. Thank you very much. Y'all have a great weekend.
You got it. Jeff Hammond, Fox Sports, on the preview of, again, the Super Bowl of NASCAR racing coming up at Daytona, 2.5-mile track, super speedway, 31 degrees of banking, 200 laps. And it is one of the premier events in the sporting calendar, of all the sporting calendars. The Indy 500, Daytona 500, Masters, U.S. Open Tennis, Wimbledon. It's on that list. And it's just a gigantic race. Jeff Hammond, always good to have him on. We'll continue with Sports Map Radio.